During the recent confrontation with Iraq, we heard all the familiar sounds of a modern war scare, special bulletins, interrupted programs, and most of all the immediacy of voices reporting live from the world's capital. We take such news gathering for granted today only because once upon a time a few men, amid rumors of a different war, had the imagination to do it first. One of them was Robert Trout, who remembers the evening 60 years ago tonight when he anchored what many now believe was the first global news broadcast.
We had the technology. What we needed was an occasion. On this night, we knew we had it. The last hours of peace seemed to be ticking away in Europe. German troops were pouring into Austria, and Hitler was bolting toward Vienna to claim his prize. At CBS, we were wondering how we might cover the outbreak of radio's First World War.
To bring you the picture of Europe tonight, Columbia now presents a special broadcast, which will include pickups direct from London, from Paris, and such other European capitals as, at this late hour abroad, have communication channels available. This is Bob Trout speaking to you from New York, opening Columbia's shortwave transatlantic program to cover the key cities of Europe.
But before As I spoke those words, I crossed capital, my fingers. No one on this earth had ever done a live news broadcast from five world capitals in one program. The outcome seemed as uncertain as the crisis it intended to report. On that night, CBS News hardly existed. We had no newsroom, no studio, and no correspondents. We had Edward R. Murrow and William L. Shirer in Europe, but they were not yet the journalistic eminences they would soon become. CBS confined their duties to setting up broadcasts of lectures and concerts. 20 years later, Ed described that time.
Before the Anschluss, arranging broadcasts from Europe was a leisurely, civilized sort of business. Plenty of time to read and to see your friends. It involved such things as relaying to this country the Vatican choir at Easter time, a speech by De Valera, folk music from Scandinavia, the song of a nightingale in a Surrey wood.
If I told you how often I heard Ed's voice come into New York Central Control introducing a choir or a swing band, you probably wouldn't believe me. But in the manner of other suspicious allegations these days, I have the tapes.
And so we say goodnight to Stefan Grappelli and Yango Reinhardt and their quintet of the Hot Club of France. They have been playing for you from the Bricktop Cabaret in Montmartre, Paris. This is Ed Murrow speaking and saying, swing it, America.
When there was news in Europe, CBS, in its wisdom, told Murrow and Shirer to schedule a broadcast, then hire a newspaper man to do it. But on this weekend, the Austrian crisis had burst so swiftly, there was no time. In a special report the night before, Shirer became the first CBS employee to go on the air with an eyewitness account of a European story. The result was mildly electric. The next morning, I sat discussing it with my boss, Paul White, a man whose smart news judgment was exceeded only by his fierce instinct for competition. He wondered why we couldn't wrap up all these reports into one program. The fact that no one ever had was a poor excuse to Paul. Within an hour, he telephoned Murrow and Shirer in Europe, where it was already early Sunday evening. He told them to be ready with live reports from London, Paris, Berlin, and Vienna by 1 a.m. European time. They had 8 hours. Seconds became precious. As they lined up reporters and transmitters, I spent the day updating facts and blocking out the program. Each correspondent needed a time cue, precise to the second, since no one was sure they would be able to hear my introduction from New York. At 8 p.m., I sat at a microphone set up in the public affairs office, lifted a headphone to my ear, and broke into the regular CBS schedule. The program of St. Louis Blues, originally scheduled for this time,
has been canceled. Tonight the world trembles, torn by conflicting forces. Throughout this day, event has crowded upon event in tumultuous Austria. As German troops swarm across frontiers in their first offensive since 1914, momentous decisions are being reached in the capitals outside Germany.
Though I'd written the words myself, even I felt a sense of disbelief reading them, as if such things couldn't really happen among a civilized people.
The Jewish Telegraphic Agency says tonight that at least 150 prominent Jews, bankers, and businessmen have been arrested by Nazi brown shirts acting as auxiliary police. The cry of anti-Semitism is being taken up in the Austrian streets. The Austrian press is under Nazi domination. The Nazis have taken over the radio, and they are out to control everything.
We were now ready to begin our radio tour of Europe. First, I said, we take you now to London.
To London, England. William L. Shira, Columbia's Central.
We take you now to Paris, France.
Sir Edgar Maurer, Chicago Daily News, European. And so now to the city of Berlin, we now switch to hear the opinions of Pierre J. Huss.
Ed Murrow had flown into Vienna the night before. Shira had not been permitted to broadcast from the city for 2 days, so we had little hope of bringing in Ed. CBS President William Paley personally telephoned the director of the Austrian radio service. In a grim voice, he interrupted Paley to tell him he was sorry, but he was no longer in charge. When Paley asked why, the line suddenly went dead. The hub of the crisis seemed beyond our reach. Then, at the last minute, the Germans opened a circuit to Vienna, and Ed stood by to file the first eyewitness news broadcast of his career. Since I had not bothered to write an introduction, it fell to an anonymous announcer in Berlin to throw Ed his cue.
We now take you to Vienna, Austria.
This is Edward Murrow speaking from Vienna. It's now nearly 2:30 in the morning, and Herr Hitler has not yet arrived. It's of course obvious that a tremendous reception is being prepared. Young stormtroopers are riding about the streets.
There's a certain air of expectancy about the city, everyone waiting and wondering where and at what time Herr Hitler will arrive tomorrow.
The last capital on the tour was our own, where CBS operations were so modest, we prevailed upon Democratic Senator Louis Schwellenbach to serve as commentator. He didn't think it was America's fight.
If the rest of the world wants to involve itself in a general brawl, that is its business. The permanent advance of civilization depends upon the successful maintenance of democratic institutions somewhere. That place should be here.
To many, it felt reassuring to be safe, to know that nothing would change. And for us in radio news, little did right away. Murrow and Shirer were told to book more music broadcasts. Just 4 years ago, in Bill's last radio interview, the memory still made him seethe.
It also reminded me of something that I still think is shocking. 2 weeks before the war started, CBS kept after Ed Murrow and me to do a show called Europe Dancing, and they kept after us. And I said, Ed, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going up to Hamburg and do a dancing thing. And he said the same thing, but they kept after us until about 3 days before the war started. They surely danced, but in a different way.
In the heat of covering a revolution in Europe, we somehow missed the sense that we were making one in journalism. The program was so successful that we did another one the next night, then another. Ultimately, it acquired a title, the World News Roundup. This morning, long after the internment of the regime that occasioned it, the CBS World News Roundup passed its 60th birthday. Much experience and even more technology have taken the risk and a bit of the edge from such broadcasts now. In 1938, a live voice from Berlin or London penetrated our isolation and imagination in a way that few today can know. But as we have grown comfortable with the world, distance has lost its wonder. What once seemed a miracle is now an hourly routine. But if technology has made global broadcasting faster and smoother, I'm not sure it has made it better. Nor, I suspect, would my old boss, Paul White, who invented the prototype 60 years ago this night. To him, it was a delivery system of spectacular dimension. But getting the story right was still the reporter's job.
With world history tense in the greatest crisis in 24 years, the Columbia Network has brought to American citizens a summary of European opinion presented from the capitals of Europe by shortwave radio across the Atlantic Ocean. This broadcast from five world capitals has been a presentation of Columbia's Department of Special Events, which will continue to cover the European situation, bringing you special broadcasts and bulletins as fresh news arrives on this side of the ocean. Bob Trout speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.